The Guardian.
Football Weekly. Magic of the Cup sees big names stage disappearing acts as unfancied sides like MK Dons, Leeds and Arsenal stage dramatic wins. There's trouble for Chris Hooton with Luton shooting, while a trip to Oldham sees Liverpool folding. We round up all of the weekend cup surprises and look forward to the midweek games that are on their way in the Premier League. QPR, Man City, Reading, Chelsea. Ooh. There's posts, tweets and a bit of fancy foreign biz too in today's Football Weekly. Hey everybody, and welcome to another Football Weekly. Barney Roney.
Hi.
Hi. Okay. Hey, Daniel Harris.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. And Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
That's that sorted then. Hey, is there a lot of ex-legal professionalism in today's pod? Barney, did you not used to be...
Yeah, I qualified as a solicitor.
Right.
And I used to work in Westminster as a parliamentary agent.
Oh, right.
But this is a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
And it wasn't really me.
This is getting like Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yep. Have you also...
I qualified as a solicitor in a city firm.
Oh, really? Right. Which city firm was that?
Herbert Smith.
Really?
Right. Yeah, you've raised your eyebrows there.
I had an interview for Herbert Smith, but I didn't get in. They made us sit around a table doing...
What are the odds, listeners?
Doing role play. We had to sit there and argue with people and put your point, but not belittle them. And it was a really difficult... You have to be a team player,
right.
But also... And I just couldn't do it at all.
Can you see any parallels with the current
situation? I came across as rude, abrasive and ignorant.
It's funny, because I think I did that as well, and maybe they were just seeking to employ that kind of person at that point when I was there.
Yeah, oh. They passed on me anyway.
Sitting around a table, not belittling other people's opinions.
Yeah, I've managed to retain those skills. The transfer.
I woke up in a cell once.
Right, there you go. Never been behind bars, actually.
I wasn't behind bars, I was behind a very thick steel door.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, figuratively bars.
Yeah.
Were there not any bars on the window?
No, there weren't. I don't know if there even was a window.
Right, that kind of place. Mm-hmm. I get you. Who would you rather have defending you, Daniel or Barney?
I think I'd rather conduct my own defence.
Right. You'd probably get on better than Liverpool defending their goal against Oldham in one of the big upsets of the weekend in the FA Cup. What a weekend of FA Cup action. Five big upsets. Was it five? I think it was five.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It depends. There were five upsets and... Villa, Millwall, Luton beating Norwich, Oldham beating Liverpool, Leeds beating Spurs, MK Dons beating QPR, and Brentford drawing with Chelsea.
All right. What does our Ben Cash this week's FA Cup results say about the Premier League in general? Is there a closer gap between the leagues or weak Premier League youth? Mike Bowden asking if fans of any top Premier League teams actually care about the FA Cup. Barney?
Well, I've been thinking about this a bit, and I mean, in part, I don't think the weakened team argument really works. If you look at the teams, they rotate all the time. I mean, Liverpool, there may be a couple of players short. Gerrard obviously didn't start. But I think in general, it's a question of the gaps a bit closer. Maybe, I mean, whenever Premier League teams play people who aren't in the Premier League, we're always surprised that they keep losing.
Yeah. Well, particularly this season, in the League Cup, we've seen that as well. Is the difference not that when a League One or Championship side plays a Premier League side and the Premier League side uses a reserve keeper, then the Premier League side loses? It's just basically reserve keepers. That's all this is. Like Liverpool with Brad Jones. And
I don't think Brad Jones was the only reason Liverpool got beaten yesterday.
No.
Well, Brendan Rodgers very generously and kindly blamed it on the young players. So, yeah, here's your opportunity. Now I'm going to chuck you under a bus to play
traffic. Do you think that was fair, blaming it on the young players?
I don't think he was right about saying it, and I also don't think that there was anything to be gained by saying it out loud, especially when they didn't pick themselves. He picked them.
They just hadn't come across anything like Matt Smith before. Jacob Steinberg has. He used to play him at university football. He was at uni in Manchester. Matt Smith was playing for Chubby Fonts, Jacob's team were the Fallowfield Thundercats, of course.
But I think there's something in that. I was looking at that team, Liverpool.
You're not interested in Jacob's?
No, well, I am. I mean, what you say about not having come across...
Yeah.
I mean, quite a few of those players would have gone through academies where you learn to be a very neat, skillful, well-behaved footballer. But you don't... I mean, that game was like the 80s. It wasn't a bit like it was a throwback to the 80s. It actually was the 80s. It was
people, cool.
It was very physical. The ground, you know, people going sort of bananas on the edge. And it just really wasn't like the kind of thing you play...
They were going bananas, not throwing bananas. It wasn't like that in the
80s. No, not quite that bad.
The thing,
It really was like a throwback, and you did wonder how many of those players have ever actually played in an atmosphere like that or against a team who... I mean, referees give you a bit more latitude in cup games. You do get... It is slightly more physical.
But it certainly was a bit more latitude in that game. Sorry, Daniel.
There's a thing about reserve leagues also that nowadays no players really play in the reserve leagues when, once they get beyond a certain age, whereas in the 80s and the 70s also, the reserve leagues would be full of sort of hard, ageing professionals who would be kicking young players around, and those games don't really happen anymore. The reserve team is basically a youth team, and once you progress from it, it doesn't have players who are coming back from injury so much anymore. They just get straight back in the first
team. But just to be clear, these results were not about a low league team kicking a Premier League team. Often the pitches are great. They look at Brentford, they play really nice football, and the gap has simply got a lot closer. They give you a really good game of your own game.
Although Oldham bizarrely have this 1 point from their last 8 League One matches record,
just goes to show how high the standard is.
Yeah, I guess so. They're on the edge of the relegation zone, and Paul Dickov's fighting for survival on the bench there.
Well, he's been told that he's future is safe for the time being.
Right. They couldn't get rid of him after that.
Well, they could. You know, the chairman is clearly unhappy with results. 1 point from 8 games is not acceptable, really, especially when you're hovering around the fringes. I thought Oldham was perhaps the most traditional of the cup shocks, in that they're a team very much built in their manager Paul Dickov's image. You know, just spiky, scrappy, very, very annoying and in your face, and they were quite effective.
Paul Dickov's nickname is F*** Off. I read an interview. I think I did the interview. We asked him what his nickname was, and his nickname is Paul F*** Off Dickov. This is one of the great nicknames.
I used to play football with Simon Corney, who's the chairman of
Oldham. Oh, right, there you go.
So if we're name-dropping, I'm blaming it on Jacob.
Wow.
And he once headbutted me on a football pitch while I was on the same team as him, because I went to withdraw him from a row in which he had become embroiled, pulled him on the shoulder to...
Were you on the same team as him?
Yes, Rail Casino. Pulled him on the shoulder to withdraw him from the row that he had instigated, and he turned around and...
And headbutted you?
Accidentally headbutted me.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay. Wow, that's two. Who were you friends with on the Oldham team, Barry?
Nobody.
Oh, okay.
A flatmate of mine once played rugby against Prince William.
Really?
At university, yes.
All right, then.
Or a former flatmate of mine.
Cool. Did they have showers together?
Where the real match began.
Yes.
And the crown jewels were on display.
Absolutely. Now, Boomsopolis posts in. He says, Liverpool versus the 6'3" Christian Benteke, a 3-1 defeat. Liverpool against the 6'2" Kenwyn Jones, a 3-1 defeat. Liverpool versus the 6'6" Matt Smith, a 3-2 defeat. So in a sense, they're improving. Although what that says, Boomsopolis, nice work, is that if you're tall and you're playing Liverpool, well, fill your boots.
Well, apparently Matt Smith hadn't scored in his previous 18 months with Oldham.
Yeah, but League One standard is very, very high.
Which isn't great for a big, lanky centre-forward like that. But he had a brilliant game yesterday and quite rightfully got the Man of the Match award.
Yeah.
But if we look at the goals that Benteke scored against Liverpool, I mean, Villa took Liverpool apart with passing, not with crosses. So I would say that one doesn't necessarily quite fit the model.
Ah, okay.
But the thing about Benteke is he doesn't leap high and head the ball around. He is just incredibly strong. And you try to get near him. Often Premier League defenders try and grab and grasp. But Benteke just kind of shimmies slightly and, you know, you're sent sprawling.
Is he a bustler?
He's a big unit. I call him a big unit.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's not as big as a beast, though, is he?
No, I don't. Beast. I once used the word beast in an article, and I was sort of told off.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it myself, but it's out there. It's out there. Liverpool face Arsenal midweek. Oof, and then they have Man City after that. Ay caramba. Arsenal. Hey, you went to see their game, didn't you, Barney, down at the Amex Stadium?
Yeah, it was brilliant. And it was a really good game. It's a really good stadium. Brighton are a great club, and they play really well. And talking about, sort of levels being equal between the leagues, I mean, Will Buckley absolutely destroyed Andre Santos for the half that he was on.
Mm.
But, you know, Andre Santos, he's played for Brazil.
Yes.
And Buckley, who's never played above the Championship, and he was brilliant. And Brighton were very good. And Arsenal's weakened team just they had to bring on the cavalry, and they could have quite easily seen them lose it without Wilshere and Walcott, who came on with 20 minutes to go. But well played, Brighton. I hope they keep pushing on in the Championship.
Right, they're some way off the promotion places, I think, at the moment, but you feel their day is coming. What about Olivier Giroud, then? Because that's 4 goals in 2 games. That's 6 in eight in all. And he's way, if you were to compare him with, say, Robin van Persie, just, you know, pulling a name out of thin air, then he has actually scored way more goals at the start of his Arsenal career than van Persie did when he arrived.
That is a bit of a bogus comparison, because van Persie, when he came to Arsenal, wasn't a central striker.
That's
he was
true.
Converted by Wenger. Mm. And Giroud was the top scorer in the French league last year and plays as a centre forward with three attacking midfielders behind him. So, I mean, he's got to score goals. But I'm a big fan. I think
Fernando Torres, well, doesn't very
well,
often
you
anymore.
You say that, but Fernando Torres actually quietly does score a lot of goals. And somebody was pointing out this week, he's got significantly more goals this season in all competitions than Wayne Rooney. Nobody goes on about Wayne Rooney. Oh, he's rubbish, send him to the knack of it.
He's not really played so much, though, Rooney.
Rooney, has he not?
I remember last Thursday, Michael Cox was absolutely flabbergasted when he discovered Torres had scored, was it 16 or 18
I think 14 at the time, but he's added another, right. And a fine goal, actually.
He was the Golden Boot winner at Euro 2012 as well.
That's true.
He's incredible, he's on fire, he's unstoppable.
Yeah, he certainly is.
He also celebrated, I mean, there were two really rotten celebrations this weekend. One of them was Fernando Torres shushing the Brentford fans as though there was no longer anything that anyone could say about him. And the other one, to go back to the Arsenal game, was Theo Walcott, who scored a deflected goal, then showed himself to be a worthy heir to Thierry Henry by celebrating in the least sheepish manner possible.
Mm-hmm.
But
what do you mean? What did he do? I was there. I didn't see him doing anything weird.
It was the kind of running off, arms extended, look at this piece of magnificence that my generous spirit has treated
the
world.
He's just scored the winner in the 85th minute of a cup tie. And, you know, we want people to be pleased, don't we?
Not saying you shouldn't be pleased, but there's a difference between celebrating jovially with your friends after you've scored a goal and running to the crowd, showing off after a deflected goal has saved your team against...
Well, he ran to the Arsenal fans. They were on that side.
Right, running to any fans. I mean, I think we have Bernie Slaven to blame for this, actually.
So hang on. There's several thousand Arsenal fans have made the journey. Arsenal were playing a brilliant cup tie. They won 3-2. He scored the winner in the 85th minute after coming on as a sub. And there's a problem with him celebrating.
I'm not saying there's a problem with him celebrating. The first point is that I think that generally, like, running to the supporters never used to happen. Like, we were talking about football in the 80s. In the 80s, no one ran to the supporters. And I was saying, I think we've got Bernie Slaven.
I just don't think that's true.
No, I think people used to celebrate with their teammates. I think it was Bernie Slaven who used to, when he scored for Middlesbrough, would kind of run and stand up on a ledge and pose in front of the crowd. But I do think that, like, when you score a deflected goal, running towards the supporters with your arms outstretched as though you've done something incredible.
But I don't think it's about whether it was deflected or whether it was a great goal. He was pleased that his team were going through to the fifth round of the FA Cup, because that was clearly the winning goal.
So are you saying when people didn't do that, they weren't pleased?
No, I'm saying
he was more pleased.
The fact it's deflected has got absolutely nothing to do with it. He was pleased his team were going. Do you only celebrate when you score a good goal? I mean, to be honest, in that game, Giroud really slightly over-celebrated his goal. He did the kind of, oh, who, me, you know. And it was only 1-0 at the time. They'd scored out nothing. That was the 14th minute. But I think if you've scored a winner in a five-goal thriller in the FA Cup fourth round, if you don't go and celebrate somewhere near your fans and look pleased, there'd be something wrong with football.
Court adjourned, guys. Let's get a word from Barry.
Well, I mean, I personally, if I scuffed one in off my arse or anything, I'd give it the full Messiah in front of the fans, no problem.
Yeah. They all count, don't they?
Yeah.
Excellent. Liverpool-Arsenal midweek, what do you think? Arsenal have had a terrific run of late. What do you think, Barney, having seen them in action at the Amex?
They're
going to do Liverpool?
They'll play their first choice midfield and we'll show
how
again.
How tall is Giroud? Is he 6 foot something?
Yeah, 6 foot something.
Ooh,
yeah.
Diaby's
quite tall. There's a few tall players in that Liverpool team.
Right, okay.
Watch out.
Well, Arsenal
team
generally lose against Liverpool. I think they've only lost one in their last 10 matches.
But they don't beat the top 10 sides, and Arsenal kind of still are a little bit the top 10 side. They're only 3 points ahead of Liverpool, so this could be a dramatic win. All right then, well, that's exciting. And so are plenty of other games coming up this midweek. Stand by for more after this.
This week on the Guardian Audio Edition, Luke Harding reports from Mali as the French army retake territory from jihadist forces. Peter Bradshaw gives 5 stars to Steven Spielberg's film Lincoln. And in this week's audiobook review, we discover the world of Jane Austen's most beloved character, Elizabeth Bennet. To subscribe for free, go to audible.co.uk/guardianaudio or find us on SoundCloud, Audioboo and in iTunes. The Guardian Audio Edition, a new way to get the whole picture.
Hey, Romance of the Cup. Do
Do you think it is, though? Do you think the cup is... I mean, I find the cup makes me feel a bit sad.
Why? Because of people going on about it.
You always
it's
have to talk about
it.
How it's just... It reminds me of my ageing Austrian grandmother sitting in her...
This is going to be a sad story.
...Victorian terraced house in Chiswick. Well, before that was a very difficult thing to have.
Barney's telling this sad story with a piece of mango on a fork, which he's waving around for dramatic effect.
But, you know, she had lots of clocks and old... tables and and she would say I was a bohemian, and she'd always be talking about how great things were in the past, and it was, she probably spent about 80-90% of her time talking about how great things were in the past, and it just reminds me of the FA Cup a bit.
I understand what you're saying, but I think it is a tournament that is still full of life and vibrancy.
Well,
and
that's used to say as well,
right, about the FA Cup.
Yeah, constantly on about the FA Cup.
Right, is she no longer with us?
She is no longer with us, unlike the FA Cup. I mean, it's not a total like-for-like fit.
No, I know.
It's just the atmosphere, you know.
This business of
grandeur.
Yeah.
You know,
all right.
Miss Havishamish, the FA Cup.
Right. Something which ITV very consciously target in their opening credits, I thought, no?
And yet, when ITV showed the highlights of the Norwich-Luton game, you got almost nothing of actually what happened in the game. So you just got... the goal, and I think that's like, because they were comparing it to when Coventry lost to Sutton. I can remember watching that game, and I can remember lots of things that happened in the game because we got proper highlights of it. So rather than it being something that happened, it was something that you watched happen, even though it was after the fact. Whereas with this game, we got very little, and we got lots of other nonsense that could have been while we were watching football instead.
Right. So basically, what this means is none of us really know what happened at Carrow Road. Yeah, thanks to ITV and their editing.
Well, I know Luton won. I was listening to this on 5 Live, just occasional snippets from Carrow Road and...
What were they doing as their main coverage? Was it the...
I can't remember.
Stoke Mountain.
I'll be honest, I was sort of dozing and just had the radio
Wigan,
on.
They were at Wigan.
Oh, were they?
And but they were sort of hopping around looking for a shock because of the romance, because the cup's just as good as it used to be.
Right. Apparently it was all on TalkSport.
Is that right?
Yeah, apparently, yeah. That's the problem. The cup sold it sold to silly channels that run advertising and don't show
you. Well, I've found increasingly in recent times I've started listening to TalkSport, and I don't know whether this means TalkSport is getting a lot better than its reputation, or I'm just getting stupider.
I do the same thing as well. I listen to it all the time. I can't get enough of Ray Parler.
Really?
Yeah, there's something about Ray Parler. He thinks brilliant.
You can't get enough?
He doesn't actually say anything. He just loves saying players' names, but he says them in a really weird way that makes you think he's actually saying, Paul Dickoff, you know, Scott Parker. And he's got sort of his own particular Ray Parler, and it sounds really
ripe and redolent with meaning.
Yeah, you look at who they've got out there. You know, Gareth Bale, and you think, Gareth Bale. But he's not actually said anything about Gareth Bale. It just he's really excited about Gareth Bale.
Yeah,
and then you find yourself sort of sitting, agreeing with things that Darren Goff and Mickey Quinn are saying. It's great. I'm annoyed that I haven't sort of listened to it for years.
No. Well, did they explain anything about how Luton won at Norwich then or not? Because that was huge. I mean, they're non-league Luton. Norwich at home, Carrow Road, have been terrifically strong, although they've had a poor record of late.
I think they won because Luton Town. That was my understanding from listening to
right.
Ray Parler.
Well, they've got Millwall up next.
Yeah, that'll be
Yikes.
Nice.
Yikes. I don't know. I mean, we were all too young to remember.
Well, it's one of my earliest memories in football, actually, that riot. I remember watching, it was a midweek game, as far as I recall, and I was up watching midweek sports special or whatever. And I can even remember, like, the face of it, the snarly face of a man with black hair and a moustache running the length of Kenilworth Road, holding a plastic seat in his hand, about to, like, fling it at someone.
You remember the horses?
And he had a mullet. And I guarantee if you dig the footage of that out on YouTube, he will be there.
Wow. Okay. So, will there be any lingering, you know?
Oh, almost certainly.
Yeah. Interesting. That's on the 6th, 7th of. I'm not going to ask Barney because that mango's just found a home. Norwich, in the meantime, hosts Spurs. What do you think about that? Spurs, of course, coming off that defeat at Leeds.
I saw most of that. And I think Spurs' situation with a striker has almost become like Manchester United's with a midfield player. Uh-huh. Where they seem to be reinforcing as many areas of the team as possible. There's some kind of joke at the expense of their supporters. Because, I mean, it's almost absurd to say that Spurs need a proper centre-forward, but Spurs need a proper centre-forward. And they didn't have one in this game. And I think that was roughly the difference between them and Leeds, who took the chances really well And I thought, although Spurs had the majority of the possession, they were quite well beaten in the end. Though, I mean, it's always difficult to take any kind of pleasure in a success for Colin Warnock.
Yeah, Neil Warnock, as you say, he's a delightful man who loves show tunes and walking his dog in Richmond Park when not being employed at Leeds. Anyway, so how are Spurs going to continue? Because Defoe's still out for a while, is he? Adebayor's off on the other side of the world?
I was at Spurs last week when they played Manchester United, and given how much of the possession they had, that they didn't actually create too many chances. And as well as lacking a centre-forward, I think they also lack a little bit of guile in midfield. So effectively, they were either passing the ball wide to Baird or to Lennon or whacking it into the penalty area. And what they've signed, hopefully, for them in Lewis Holtby is someone with a bit of a brain and a bit of technique to who'll play behind whichever striker they end up with.
Who's he going to play behind at the moment, though?
Well, that's the thing. With Adebayor's away, but yeah, they may well end up signing a striker as well. But
do you think? Because he said they wouldn't, Andre Villa, I suppose. He said we're quite happy with what we've got at the moment.
Well, they always say that, don't they? You can't stop getting. But, I mean, it's got Parker coming back into the team. He's been injured for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
The mini slump has slightly coincided with that. It takes him a while to get going, I think.
Well, Sandro's out, isn't he? Sandro's so fundamental to Spurs.
Well, yeah, I mean, are you being sarcastic?
No, I've read that on so many occasions.
No, he is. He's, true. And he's a you know, massive athlete, and he covers a lot of ground. Maybe he's a beast.
He is, apparently.
Yeah.
He's a minor beast, I think. But
he calls himself the beast.
Does he really?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, well, he must be the beast, then.
He might refer to himself in third person as well. I like it when they do that.
The beast is injured. The beast will be back soon.
Yeah.
The beast is taller than Scott Parker.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Scott Parker coming back, I think, would actually be a bit of a disadvantage for Spurs. I think he's someone who, by virtue of throwing himself into tackles and running around aimlessly for quite a lot of time, has altered the public perception of him that he's some kind of far better player than what he actually is.
He did win the Player of the Year the other day. That's not my point at all. I'm just saying he's come back from a long breakout and he's a very important player and it's going to take him a while to get back.
No, I'm
disputing. He's a very good Premier League player.
I don't think he's good enough for Spurs and where Spurs want to be. And the fact that, say, he's been picked for England ahead of Michael Carrick tells you quite a lot about the England managers who've been responsible for that.
If anyone's going to have a go at Spurs players on this podcast, Barry, that's your job. What do you think? Is he good enough, Scott Parker?
I'm a fan of Scott Parker.
All right, then.
I'm a fan of his side-parking. Yeah, but to be fair, Aaron Lennon has upped his game considerably since I had a go at him, and it's nice to see that he's taken my criticism on board and acted accordingly.
Okay, let's see now. Aston Villa. Hey, it's getting worse, not better.
They're in a total tailspin. Paul Lambert looked just lost after they were beaten by Millwall, and he didn't do himself any favours by refusing to take questions from the man from the Birmingham Mail, a guy called Matt Kendrick.
Very interesting match report.
I haven't read his match report.
It largely consists of him saying, this cannot go on, again and again and again, a bit like that scene in The Shining.
Right, okay. But I don't know Matt Kendrick, but apparently he's very well respected by Villa fans, and I believe Paul Lambert has the hump with him over an article he wrote recently saying that it was time for Randy Lerner, the club's owner, to come out and answer questions from the fans. And you know, it seems a bit childish just blanking a reporter at a press conference. And Lambert has never been particularly media friendly, and will normally at least, you know, trot out the usual bland platitudes.
You're right, there is an ongoing thing, and part of his problem is, you know, it's a bit of a cosy club with the media and players, and it does what Harry Redknapp's so good at is, you know, having friends in the press. But Lambert, you know, never played in England, and it might be a good time to have a few friends. And he's the thing with the guy from the. I mean, you know, that's just terrible, but it is slightly an ongoing problem that he, I think, feels he's been a little bit unfairly treated by others and is possibly taking it out on this guy.
There's also what you said about Randy Lerner should speak to the supporters, and I think that's true too, because when he first came, he had some quite good PR, and he was this benevolent owner as opposed to the kind of rapacious owners who were there to take as much money as they could. But actually, Villa's got a lot more expensive. Apart from the spending splurge when Martin O'Neill was in charge, they spent very little money.
Although, I mean, Dan Bent, for example, that was a huge amount of money.
But relative to what the money that it was thought they were going to spend,
right.
And also they're selling players all the time as well. Mm. Like they sold Ashley Young, they sold Stuart Downing, but Randy Learn is not actually this nice, friendly, benevolent owner who loves sport much the same as most of the other owners.
Yeah, he has an Aston Villa tattoo.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
His circumstances have changed a bit as well.
Who, Randy Lerner's?
Yeah.
He's got a lot richer, apparently.
Yeah,
but... I know all this from reading the terrific Birmingham Mail/Post thing. Anyway, after the disaster against Bradford then, they get beaten by Millwall, who are, I need to be fair, 12 places below them in the kind of league structure. Vlaar has come back. That hasn't made any difference at all, because that was supposed to be one of the things that was going to help them.
Yeah, people thought he might help steady the ship, and the ship is anything but steady. Yep. It's listing violently and halfway down, sort of with the front bit. What's that? The
prow.
Prow.
Or bow.
Sticking, like, pointing skywards at the moment.
Sprit. Yeah.
And looks like they might just sink silently beneath the waves.
Actually, they need a beast, don't they? They need a beast at the back. Vlaar is not quite beastish.
Okay, they're taking on Newcastle. This is an interesting game. They're 1 point and one place above them, Newcastle. Aston Villa have only scored 8 goals at home all season. They haven't scored any in their last 5 home matches. Newcastle, the only team in all 4 divisions yet to have an away win. Should be an absolutely cracking match.
It's like relativity, isn't it? Who's falling fastest and who's...
Don't things fall at the same rate? Well, it depends how the aerodynamic...
Not in the Premier League. Maybe it's like trains leaving a station and which one's... going away fastest.
Right.
It's like, Jimbo, which is heavier, a ton of feathers or a ton of bricks?
Well, they're both tons. Hey. That's very much the point of that one. But I enjoy a riddle.
Yeah. Newcastle, it'd be interesting what Pardew does. He's got 5 new signings. Does he throw them all in? Or
sort of
ease them in gradually? He could conceivably feel like a new centre-half, new... centre midfielder, left back, striker and a right back.
Will he go for the all French outfield that people are talking about?
I don't know.
Yeah?
I doubt it.
You think?
Well, Colaccini will almost certainly play and he's not
true.
French.
Well, he's in dispute with them at the moment, Colaccini, so I think that Pardieu will have no option but to throw in as many players as he possibly can because they're not...
How many is he going to play? 14? 15?
I don't know. It depends to his arms get tired willful. After all the throwing.
Yeah.
What's the ton of feathers thing?
What about that?
Poor Andy Murray.
Bit of fun.
Sorry, Daniel. Poor Andy Murray.
Well, he was disturbed yesterday by a feather, not in ton form.
Oh, was he?
Yes, as he was about to serve at a crucial moment.
What was the feather doing there?
It was coming down from the sky into his eye line.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he then had to pause, having tossed the ball up, remove the feather, and then lost the game subsequently.
Oh, no way. God, that's like that butterfly effect theory, isn't it?
Exactly like it.
Yeah. Cool. Right, I'm going to move on then, but we haven't really talked about the disaster and the trains. Which train is going to leave the station slower then, do you think, in this game?
I think Newcastle will be all right, because they do still have some pretty good players there and they can get their act together. Villa, really, there's sort of little bits of the team that just aren't functioning at all.
Mm.
And I worry about them much more than Newcastle.
Yeah. Newcastle, also, do you think?
Kabay's come back for Newcastle, and he scored last week, and he was responsible for much of the good things that they did last season. I'm sure Newcastle will be fine.
I think Newcastle will win this game.
Well, there you go. Well, that's enough of that cup stuff for now. But there's still delights like QPR's extraordinary home collapse against MK Dons, and Reading as well. And what's going to happen when Reading play Chelsea? I fancy the Roars. I do. Anyway, we're here. Sorry, Barry.
No, I was just going to say I have a nice little. Double, I fancy, coming up midweek.
All right, we'll hear more about that a little bit later on. Next up, Sid. Sid, loads of questions for you today. First off, what is the curse that you were tweeting about on Sunday?
I seem to have this horrible habit of destroying teams.
Oh.
And it was pointed out to me, and at first it was like, well, okay, yeah, all right, every now and again it's bound to happen that you write about a team that's very good and then they go and blow it. But it seems to be happening with really quite frightening regularity at the moment. Last week I wrote about how good Atletico Madrid were and how this was a side that was solid and didn't just collapse. And they went and lost 3-0 at Athletic Bilbao and completely collapsed this weekend. A couple of weeks ago, I wrote about Rayo Vallecano and how good they were. They went away to Granada, which is not a place you should go. I think it was Granada anyway. not a place you should go and lose, and they lose. And also, the other thing is, it's happened to me twice. This is the thing that the readers don't know, Jimbo. It's happened to me twice with columns I haven't written. Twice I have gone to games in Madrid to see the visiting team to write about just how good they are, and both times they've been absolutely walloped. And that's in the last, we're talking about the last month. In the last month, I think I've screwed four teams by doing this. So as you can imagine, I've had loads of requests now to write about certain teams to try and screw them as well. So yesterday, the reason why this came up yesterday was because I went to Rayo Vallecano to see Betis, who've been brilliant this year and have been great away from home, second best away record in the league. Went to see them play, thought, right, I'm going to watch Betis, try and speak to some of the players afterwards, have a word with the manager, try and explain how this relatively small club has played such lovely football and played really well and got themselves a Champions League place. And Rayo Vallecano absolutely destroyed them yesterday. So it was all a, well, I was going to say a wasted journey. It wasn't a wasted journey because I saw what I think is probably the best goal I've seen so far this season.
Describe it, Sid.
Well, it was Rayo playing a really, really lovely move with a couple of really clever little flicks on the right-hand side. Then it was spread all the way over to the left-hand side, and it was more enjoyable because of where I was sitting, so it was right in front of me. And there's something really great fun about sitting near a cross and watching a cross arc right in front of your eyes and seeing someone come diving in on the other side to head it into the net. Really brilliant goal scored by Deli Basic, who Jonathan Wilson told me was the name of a Serbian supermarket, which I quite liked, Deli Basic, you see. Which made me think, as I said to him yesterday, I've always thought that Costa Curta is a Geordie supermarket.
Yeah. All right, good. Now, what else this weekend? There was also an extraordinary Deportivo Valencia, what Gabriele Marcotti was describing the derby of the bankrupt.
Yeah, I feel like Gab Marcotti has just stolen my thunder, Jimbo. Oh. Because this
Did
is what I'm writing
it as
about.
At first, right? Okay.
I'm writing about this because this is a game where the rivalry has been really intense. Partly because these two, for a while, and this isn't the only reason. Obviously, the rest of the reasons will come out in the column later on. Partly because for a while these were, you could sort of argue, the best two teams in Spain. For a 6-year period, they won three leagues between them, a couple of Copa del Reyes, two Champions League finals, a Champions League semi-final, and so on. But now they're in big trouble. In the last 10 days, both of their financial crises have caught up with them. Valencia now effectively owned by the Valencia regional government, who also own controlling shares in Elche and Hercules. And Deportivo have gone into voluntary administration, which includes, and the list is incredible. I remember that Portsmouth thing with the St. John's ambulance. Mm-hmm. And there's an element of that when you look at the list of who they owe money to. It's extraordinary. And it's, I think it's 212 different people. One of them is a restaurant in La Coruña. They owe them €107,000 per restaurant in La Coruña because that's where they used to go for their late night meals, particularly when they were negotiating and stuff. And this is despite the fact that Deportivo own a restaurant with a Michelin star, yet they've managed to rack up €107,000 in another one.
Wow. Astonishing. How was the game anyway?
Great fun. I mean, this is the whole thing. I'm writing this whole piece about how this rivalry has completely been ruined and all the rest of it. And it was brilliant. 5 goals, 3-2, one in the first minute, one in the last minute, 2 red cards, and Ricky playing well. Best performance I've seen from Ricky since Bianca caught him in bed with some other woman.
Right.
But, Tish, I've decided not to write that because it won't work in print.
No. Unlike in...
It didn't really work in...
Yeah.
Yes, very good.
But what's going to happen with Deportivo then? I mean, these are the only two teams, apart from Real Madrid and Barcelona, that have ever won the Liga ever since, you know, before we were born.
Well, since a very long time. Well, bear in mind, Atletico Madrid won it in 96. But then going back, yeah, I mean, these were the two alternatives. These were the big teams that could have challenged a big two. Valencia, it's very difficult to know what will happen with Valencia because they've been living with a huge debt for a while and bringing it down slowly. And it was at €550 million. It's now down at €387 million, I think. So they're doing a pretty good job. But that's still a huge, huge gap. And they've still got these two stadiums, one they can't sell and one they can't afford to build. They're now owned by the council, who's saying they're looking for a buyer. But I imagine that buyer will be more a case of, listen, I'll take it for free, but I'll take on the debts. And they will still have that problem of what to do with the land that Mestalla currently stands on. And until they can resolve that, they're in big, big trouble. Deportivo's situation is different. And I think, I mean, morally it's quite hard to judge this, but morally I think it's a real mess. Deportivo have gone into voluntary administration, which basically means that Lendoiro, the president, can stay in place with the administrators. And voluntary administration in Spain, or any administration in fact, carries no sporting penalty. So in other words, they can basically reach agreements to not pay the people they owe money to, and it doesn't cost them anything in sporting terms. And that's one of the big problems Spain's had, that clubs have gone into administration not necessarily as a problem, but as a nice handy way of clearing their debts.
Sid, brilliant stuff. Thank you very much for that. And
you've forgotten the thing that everyone's talking about.
Why, you mean Real taking on Barcelona, is it? And Messi's
I was going to say, maybe we're going to strike a blow for the common man and not talk about it, but Messi and Ronaldo again.
Yeah, again, as you say. Amazing
again,
stuff.
Again, good, brilliant, move on.
Okay.
Like it.
All right, Sid, nice one. When do they actually play each other in the Copa?
Wednesday night, so talk to you about that on Thursday.
Brilliant stuff. All right, thanks then, Sid.
Good stuff, cheerio. Bye.
Cheers, Sid Lowe in Spain. Yeah, well, Messi with 4 goals, Ronaldo with just the 3 this weekend. Exciting enough, there was a player who scored 4 goals in Italy. Remarkably, it was in Sampdoria's. Rubbish old Sampdoria's. They had a 6-0 victory over Pescara, and young Mauro Icardi, the 19-year-old Argentine, who is, like Messi, he's from the same town as Messi. He spent a couple of years at La Masia in the Barcelona setup as well. They let him go. He's at Sampdoria, and he scored 4 goals. He's also the guy who scored the winner in the derby against Genoa. He also scored away to Juventus. He's brilliant. Anyway, he's on Premier League Scouts, $40,000 a year. $40,000 a year. So get in there. Big news in Italy, meantime, was that Juventus dropped points and lost their rag in a 1-1 draw against Genoa. They're absolutely furious about a handball that wasn't given at the death. They went a bit loopy after the final whistle, their director accusing the referee a bit for being partial because he comes from near Naples, and Napoli are their big
rivals. Without any irony whatsoever.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it, Daniel? You know, of all the clubs, you think after all the things they've done. But you see, from a lot of people's perspective, it's like, why don't you just try and keep your heads down and try and build a bit of goodwill? But they don't see it that way. They see themselves as the wronged team, the team that was framed by Inter, and this is all part of the same conspiracy. Anyway, Napoli are now only 3 points behind them after becoming the first team all season to win at Parma. Edson Cavani, Barry, with his 27th goal in 26 games.
Yeah, I believe that was an excellent game and there should have been a lot more goals.
Well, you may believe that, but nobody really knows for sure because it being Parma in January, it was so foggy that nobody could see anything at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's like being on ITV.
Very much so, yeah. So they're just 3 points behind now, Juventus, having been given those 2 points back the other week that they had taken back off them for, you know, et cetera and so on. And the two teams are due to meet in Naples in about a month. So that'll be an absolutely terrific game. Milan continued to creep up, Inter continued to stumble. Lazio lost their eagle, Olympia. Barney, I know you'll find that you like wildlife. Mm. They have an eagle which they fly around before games.
It's a very stirring emblem, the eagle, isn't it? But so many sort of movements attached to that particular part of Italy down the years have adopted the eagle as a... You know, I find it very stirring, and it speaks to something deep within me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, sadly, though, for Lazio, the eagle, which generally takes off and does a few circuits of the stadium, then of the pitch, and then lands again, and the game proceeds, it just took off and took off, basically.
Did he, by any chance, fly over the Rod Laver Arena in Melbourne and molt a feather?
I don't think so, but it is significant, surely, that Lazio, who had been enjoying an incredible unbeaten run, went and lost at home to Chievo, 1-0. Just saying. Geese at the capital, eagle at the Olympic. Anyway, Roma drew 2-2 at Bologna, and Zdenek Zeman, who you probably recall was being really popular and everybody thought, fantastic, why haven't we had him back way before this, because he's brilliant, apparently he could soon be out as early as this weekend, according to latest reports from Rome. He's lost the dressing room.
Eagles dressing rooms.
Yeah, everybody's losing stuff
losing
all
everything.
Over. Tempers, yeah. There you go. And Juve, of course, have picked up Nicolas Anelka. Is that a good signing, do you think? 5 months? Is that a canny little signing?
Well, he's a great player. But I don't think China agreed with him.
No.
And there's talk of Drogba's signed for...
That's who Juve wanted before, and now he's gone to Galatasaray.
Yeah, it's a brilliant signing.
I don't think
them.
He's quite gone there yet. I think they are negotiating.
All right, well,
if he does, it's a brilliant signing.
Yeah, for sure, and a much better one than Anelka, I think.
Do you think so?
Well, Drogba was still the man in the Champions League last season, whereas Anelka is someone who has folded under pressure on numerous occasions, whereas Drogba is precisely the opposite, like perhaps the best big game player of all time, almost.
All right. Okay, well, Galatasaray, extraordinary what they're doing, because they picked up Wesley Sneijder, of course, last week. He made his debut in the derby on Sunday night, and I'm going to admit, I don't know who they were playing in the derby, because there's more than one other Istanbul...
Besiktas, I think.
Okay. In the derby on Sunday night against Besiktas, which they won.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was Besiktas.
Right. And they were down to 10 men, because, of course, Felipe Melo got sent off, but they still won. Hey, Galatasaray, they're doing all this because the Champions League, right? They got Schalke in the next round. Using our collective wealth of Turkish stroke Bundesliga knowledge, what do we think? Do we think that, say, a Drogba coming in and a Snyder and maybe one or two other little sneaky signings could swing that one Galatasaray's way?
Well, I went to see Galatasaray early in the season when they beat Man United.
Ah.
And I thought they'd... I mean, they were playing very young, and Nick Powell was playing for Man United, but I thought they looked really good. And Felipe Melo is a really good player.
Mm.
He's got one of those names that is the opposite of what he is. I don't know if there are any other examples.
Oh, Melo, yeah. Claudio Gentilis is producing them with probably the non plus ultra of... Yeah, very good. The opposite of nominative determinism, whatever that would be. Good. Faker Stella says, how does Barney feel about being popular enough to have a fan account on Twitter?
Well, popular enough to have some people taking the piss out of you on Twitter, yeah.
Well, is that your equivalent of the Olivia Giroud kind of, oh, shucks me?
No, I mean, I think it's some...
Run to the fans, Barney.
Some very stoned students...
They're waiting for you.
...having a laugh at the Guardian man.
I'd say it was Barry.
I don't think Barry's got other things to do.
A lot of people seem to think it was me. It isn't me.
Right, not you. Skipper D said Richardson and Glendenning. Oh, good use of surnames. Putting a negative spin on NUFC's French signings. Yet afterwards, a mention of Zaha to Man United. Zaha, points out Skipper D, who's got no top league experience, was 17.5 million. Whereas five French players here, with loads of experience, international and stuff, was only 1 million more, 18.5 for Newcastle. So that's a good bargain, isn't it?
Well, it depends how they turn out. I think that's just an example of someone taking an off-the-cuff flippant remark very, very seriously, as tends to happen sometimes.
I mean, Man United don't want a van load of random Frenchmen. They want one very good player who will play for them for a long time.
All right. Can't think of a good name, says, I'm hoping not only do we sign Zaha, but we also sign Kaká and re-sign Saha. Zaha, Kaká, Saha, aha, he said. And then Dante Bigsbosch does a whole 11 of this, but I'll spare you that. Mark here says, a back four of Dawson, Walker, Norton, Corker is unusually trochaic in its tetrametry. I'm not sure if I understand those words, or even if they exist. Barney, what have you got?
I've got young fish cost a fortune.
Yeah, from Charlton Athletic, bless. That's for me, that's, again, you can't beat that.
No, it's also, I quite like...
Let's hear it again.
Young fish cost a fortune. There was an Ipswich team that was getting the whole of the southern branch of the northern line together at one point. They had Stockwell and Clapham in them, and I was just waiting for them to get a ballon, but it never happened.
Right, that's a shame, isn't it? But does the word trochaic, does that exist? You ever heard that one before?
Yeah, he just used it.
Oh, okay.
Didn't some team once almost have a backline called Weird Tebbly Shite? I'm thinking Celtic, but it was weird. Celtic never had weird, did they? I think someone might say, oh, if Celtic sign weird, their back line would be weird, tebbly shy.
That wins.
Right. Look at this. So we've still got two pages of kind of midweek stroke, weekend cup, etc. Look, we've got to talk about QPR, because they're facing Man City. They're coming off and absolutely stunned. And I don't know what to make of this, because on one hand, QPR had done brilliantly of late. They beat Chelsea away, they drew at home with Spurs, drew with West Ham as well, and then at the weekend they go and take on MK Dons from League One, and they were absolutely destroyed. It's almost like it was just a different team completely.
Well, it pretty much was a different team. Aha, taps it in. I mean, it was a good opportunity for Harry Redknapp to impart some blame, which was something he hadn't done for a little while.
Right, so who did he blame?
He blamed the players for not trying hard enough, and he said that he basically portrayed himself as this benevolent benefactor who was giving them the opportunity to claim their place in his first 11. They spurned him cold-heartedly and got beaten by MK Dons, but it's not quite as straightforward as that, because you can't chuck 11 players together who haven't played for a little while, haven't played together probably ever before, and hope that they suddenly pull together this performance. And when you're playing a settled side, and as we're kind of patronising these lower division teams all weekend by saying, wow, these teams can actually play football, no way. And so they played MK Dons, who can play, who were a settled side, and obviously they played really well, and that's roughly what happened. When you've got a team playing a collection of not like-minded individuals, shouldn't be that surprising when it's quite easy for the team to win.
Right, okay, fair enough. When they take on Man City, of course, slightly different scenario, although Man City are without Vincent Kompany. Is this going to be another of these dogged QPR performances?
All the stats suggest that QPR should lose by a lot of goals to nil, and Kompany being out is probably the only point in their favour.
Ryan Nelson could be off next week, they say, no?
Kompany, actually, when City started struggling in the second half of last season, there were really, I think, two main factors as to why that was. And one of them was that Silva lost form, and he's playing really well at the moment. And the other one was that Kompany got injured and got suspended. So him not being there is quite a big deal, not just because he's a great defender, which he is, but he makes the players around him play better, and he's someone who leads the team on the field. So I think that QPR have got slightly more of a chance because, as you say, they've got Remy and they've got a few other players. Terap's playing quite well, but obviously you would expect City to win that quite comfortably.
City have won every game since Toure went to the African Cup of Nations.
Curious, isn't it?
And Javi Garcia's come in and, he's not particularly eye-catching, but he's really good in that role, and he's actually surprisingly forceful.
Well, I think City ran into a bit of trouble against Stoke because Mancini didn't pick a team with any pace in it. So they had Garcia, they had Barry, they had Zeko, they had Tevez. And I think had they played maybe one player who could run slightly quicker, then they would have found that they won that game much more comfortably than they actually did.
Right, well, there you go. That's QPR Man City coming up on Wednesday. I think, is that Wednesday, Barry?
Tuesday,
as I say. Also on the Wednesday is Everton West Brom. Everton went through in the cup, didn't they? Who have they got next? Oh, of course, they're going to Oldham. That'd be interesting. And they've only had one defeat in 10. They're doing terrifically, aren't they? West Brom are in a bit of problems.
That's a very mid-1980s sort of game, isn't it? You should get a replica of Joe Royal's head.
It's back to the 80s again, is it? Yeah, okay. So Everton, West Brom. Fulham taking on West Ham. Yeah, that's midweek. Two teams looking over their shoulders.
I don't really have an opinion. They're both in sort of not having a good time of it, and they could both desperately do with a win.
Clash of styles.
Yeah.
You're strolling around Bulgarians against your kind of
up and at 'em.
Yeah.
EastEnders.
Traditional strengths.
What about Man United against Southampton? How did Southampton look under Pochettino? Did you see the Everton game?
I didn't see that game.
I was there.
Oh, you were there?
Yeah.
Go on, tell us about that then.
Well, they looked the same as they did under Nigel Atkins.
You're South Coast, aren't you?
I am South Coast, but I've been there a lot. But, they looked the same. He just kept the same shape and pretty much the same team. There were a couple of changes, but those are injuries. I think he's a really impressive man. I don't know much about his management.
What impressed you about him?
He was straight on the pitch at the beginning, yelling in his captain's ear. I mean, we've got a lot of stuff about how he needs an interpreter. But he's a big, sort of friendly-looking, muscular, impressive man. I know these things shouldn't matter.
No,
but in English
do,
football, he will stride into the dressing room. He was absolutely pissing himself laughing about Jason Punchin going off that wasn't kind of, they obviously all had a really good laugh about that. And he seems very likable and charming. And that's almost as important as his tactical awareness and all that kind of stuff coming into the dressing room halfway through.
The players who've played for him, I think, are actually split about that summit because he's actually supposed to be quite a hard disciplinarian and rather than like this kind of nice, friendly, avuncular big guy. So, and some of them quite like that because it means that you'll be fit and you'll be disciplined, and other players really, really hate him.
That's managers for you, isn't it? I mean, you find the same thing about
probably
Atkins, to be honest.
Well, Southampton unbeaten since before Xmas, and Man United will win, basically. Yeah. Okay, moving along. Ooh, Stoke Wigan. Barry, you were excited to tell about that. Hang on, listeners. Stoke Wigan. Barry.
Well, I just noticed today Wigan are 3-1 to win this game, and I think they will win it and possibly win it comfortably.
Why?
Well, Stoke's defence is now very porous. They've conceded 13 goals in their last four games. It took them 14 games to lose that many from the start of the season.
Has someone gone out injured or something?
I don't know. I didn't have time to check, and I don't know enough about Stoke City to know off the top of my head, I'm afraid.
I did hear Tony Pulis on the radio saying, "We've stopped defending as a team."
Oh, so surely they shouldn't have done that.
No, they used to do that, and now they don't do it anymore.
Right.
Stoke have also lost their last three Premier League games, and Wigan are undefeated in their last seven matches against Stoke. Wigan. So the only thing sort of pointing towards a Stoke win or a Wigan defeat in this is the fact that I'm tipping them for a comfortable win.
But you're not just
win.
Tipping them. You got this in a...
Well, I agree with you. You said earlier that... you said you think Reading will beat Chelsea. I think they'll get a result and may not necessarily win. And throw in Newcastle and a nice little treble there.
Right, so you're throwing in Newcastle to do what? Win at Villa?
To beat Villa, yeah. So I got
Barry's treble is
Newcastle to beat Villa, Wigan to beat Stoke, and say you could either split your stake and go a Reading draw and Reading win, or just go all out for Reading win, death or glory.
All right, well, let's hear your rationale. Put it to Daniel and Barney, if you will, why you think Chelsea, European champions, lest we forget, are going to struggle so very much at the Medeski Stadium against bottom three side Reading.
Reading have won five of their last six matches. They've scored 12 goals in their last four games.
Woof.
Chelsea's problems are well documented. They've struggled. So far this year, they've lost to QPR and Swansea, and they've only drawn with Southampton.
Mm. And of course, in the Cup at the weekend, they only managed a 2-2 against Brentford.
Yeah, great game.
Yeah. Although Fernando Torres, he scored.
Yes.
Yep. Darren Allam says, hope Brentford gets some credit in the podcast this week. Not just about Chelsea, please. Brentford.
I was just going to say, though, Rosler has done a really good job, and he looks like a really good appointment. He's thoroughly thrown himself into that. And they're a nice footballing team as well. Mm-hmm. They don't just go out to sort of kick Chelsea. I went to the press conference before that game with him, and what was really struck me, he really did genuinely think they were going to win it. He'd been studying the DVDs, and he said he'd altered his plan, been talking to the players, and it wasn't just we're going to go out there and see what happens. He really, really thought they were going to win, and they very nearly did.
Mm. Do you hold out much hope for them at Stamford Bridge? Because Chelsea's record at Stamford Bridge, anything but comforting for the Blues.
I think it'd be another really tight game.
Ooh.
It was nice to see Oscar, to go back to Chelsea, score such a great goal, because when Rafael Benitez turned up, one of the things that was disappointing as a, not a neutral, but someone who doesn't support Chelsea, was that he took Oscar out of the team, because he was someone, probably the player I'd most enjoyed watching in the first half of the season, perhaps, apart from Berbatov, obviously, the most genuine artist in the league, and someone who could do some things that you weren't expecting him to do, who played with really great imagination. And if you'd been watching Chelsea prior to then, one of the things you would not have been thinking was, I really need to break up that Oscar Hazard Mata triumvirate, which was almost the first thing Benitez did. And it was Oscar who was the fall guy.
Mm. People were so happy about Moses coming into the team and felt that he was one of the big improvements thereafter.
I found that pretty peculiar. I thought, having watched Chelsea in the first half of the season, it was the lack of a proper holding midfield player, and the lack of a striker, and the lack of good defending that was holding them back, or in other words, everything apart from those three great players who were playing behind Torres at the time. And so it's nice to see Oscar, who I think there were doubts about quite how fit he was, but it's nice to see him coming back and doing something as brilliant as he did yesterday.
They should get a few more games with the ball boy bands.
Oh, that's true, with Eden Hazard being out. Reading, anyway, beating Sheffield United, and as you mentioned, they're a terrific run of results. Chelsea have got a huge list of fixtures to get away in the next month or so, and one or two injuries beginning to pick up there, and Hazard maybe going out for a lengthy spell, we don't know. Just looks like they could be vulnerable, no?
Well, they clearly are vulnerable, and they could be more vulnerable, and you know, there's a very strong case to be made for Reading doing very well in that game.
Right, okay then. And possibly Brentford,
of course, they may not, but there is, you know.
Right. When do Brentford get their return at Stamford Bridge?
That's on the day of the next round games, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, which is always a shame when that happens, when there isn't space in the calendar for a replay, so all the round takes place at the same time.
6th of February, isn't it?
Is it? Oh, okay, all right.
Brentford were kind of lucky in the end. I think they thoroughly deserved the draw, but they could easily have conceded a penalty in the closing seconds for handball.
Anyway, speaking of closing seconds, that's where we are now in this podcast, because frankly, that's it.
It's a very serious and intense pod, I thought.
I don't think it was, Barry. I have to disagree with you there.
I can't remember any sort of...
No laughs.
No.
There were laughs.
Were there?
Yeah. We had
we laughed
times.
A little.
We did. You know, there's a time for laughter. There's a time to laugh and a time to
cry. I don't want to be here when the laughter stops.
Right, okay.
That's Ecclesiastes.
What?
Time to laugh, time to cry.
I was quoting Rapper's Delight, actually.
I thought you were quoting Footloose.
A time to break and a time to chill.
Can we do that from the beginning?
Act civilised and act real ill. Good knowledge. Nice one. Very good. Thank you, Daniel, for joining us today. Barry Glendenning, producer Ben, Barney Roney. We'll be back on Thursday. Do join us then. Have a super week in the meantime.